is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1226 on Nation Radio. You can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Interesting interview. I enjoyed that very much with E.J. McGuire. Listening to him and watching him do scouting reports for, well, I guess 6 years now. And it's interesting to talk to the guy and to find out exactly where he is, and look forward to the final Central scouting ratings in early April. The Red Line Report ratings are out. The top 10 are out today. And we'll get to that in the second hour with Jonathan Willis. Joined now, very happy to have on the show, Tom Awad from Hockey Prospectus. Tom, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Tom, I wanted to get you on, and something came on to Gabriel Desjardins' Behind the Net blog, and you gave a fabulous answer. So I decided, you know what, pick up the phone and call this week. He asked the question, is a defensive defenseman capable of matching the value of an offensive defenseman, and how might this be expressed statistically? So I want to go, your answer was outstanding, and I want to go through it, if I may. Can you summarize what you said with regard to the defensive defenseman having the same value as an offensive defenseman?
Absolutely. Well, the defensemen are very, there's, contrarily to forwards, whose main role is mostly to score, defensemen can be very different in terms of their role. There's a lot who are much better in terms of their puck movement ability, ability to quarterback the power play, things like that, make the first zone clearing pass. And there's others who are much stronger in the, you know, defensive shutdown role, be it physical, positional play, etc. And we notice it a lot in terms of defensemen's usage, in terms of their ratio of, say, power play time to penalty killing time, and who they get matched against and where they get started, whether they get started in offensive zones or defensive zones. And what we notice is that for defensemen, there's a lot of top defensive defensemen, you know, with low point totals, and that we kind of know that they're good, but, you know, it's kind of hard to quantify it. You know, guys like Zbigniew Michalek or, I don't know, Douglas Murray, guys like this. And the only real way you can find these guys' value is if you look at the amount of ice time that they're getting, the amount of penalty-killing ice time that they're getting, and also who they're playing against. So Gabriel Desjardins has a good metric for this, which is quality of competition. And that gives a very good idea of whether your, you know, coaches, who they have confidence in to match up against the top players on the other team.
So if we take even strength ice time, PK ice time, and qual comp, and let's just use the Oilers as an example since we're an Edmonton-based show. If I grab the Oilers stats this year, the top 4D for Edmonton at even strength are Whitney, Gilbert, Smead, Peckham. They handled the most minutes of players who had 30 games or more. The defensive defensemen in that group are Smead and Peckham, and it's the same four that played the toughest qual comp, according to Behind the Net, and the same four who played the top PK minutes. So aside from making Curtis Foster feel bad, those are the men that Tom Rennie trusted, those top four, correct?
That's correct, exactly. Okay.
All right, so that I applied it also to the 05-06 team that went to the Stanley Cup Final, and the top four were Pronger, Jason Smith, Steve Staios, and one of the guys that they traded for, I can't remember, Spotcheck. So the application works very well from my recollection and the way the Oilers look moving forward. If the Oilers break camp in the fall with Smead and Peckham in the top 4D next year, if they don't do it, that doesn't necessarily mean that they didn't have confidence in them. That was just the best option available to Tom Rennie at this time.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, he's a top 4D on one team might not necessarily be a top 4D on another team. You know, again, like you said, depending on who's available. But yeah, it seems like Tom Rennie is using, you know, his players consistently. And generally what's interesting about these metrics is that they tend to match what fans who pay attention kind of notice with their eye but can't quite put their finger on. You know, often you look at guys and, you know, the problem is that a lot of the mainstream stats that we have, there's very little out there. What do you get in terms of mainstream stats? Goals, assists, plus minus, you know, and penalty minutes. And that's, I mean, really, that's about it. Even finding, you know, PK ice time is not a trivial exercise. You can get it on the NHL.com website, but a lot of other, you know, be it Yahoo Sports, TSN, things like that, don't carry this naturally. So it's very hard from a statistical point of view to get even the basic stats that would allow you to get a feeling on these guys.
Talking to Thomas Awad from Hockey Prospectus, and we're discussing advanced stats and specifically defensive defensemen. You know, I have no proof on this, but it seems to me that excellent defensive defensemen are difficult to identify year to year because they get injured a lot and are not completely healthy, even if they're playing sometimes for years in a row. Jason Smith was an example. His performance would go from great to mediocre, and you'd think, oh, he's just having a bad season, but he was often injured. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I wouldn't say, I don't know if it's especially limited to defensive defensemen. You notice it on a lot of other players. I mean, one example that comes to mind is Brian Campbell of the Chicago Blackhawks, who last year during the regular season, was one of the Blackhawks defenseman leader. Obviously, he's not a defensive defenseman. He's an offensive defenseman. But he was getting significant amounts of ice time, both on the power play and at even strength. And then his role changed in the playoffs. He was shaking off an injury, and he moved down to number five, more or less, on the depth chart in Chicago. So even for offensive players, the same thing applies, except in their case, it's more noticeable. You tend to notice it in their points because they're getting less ice time. They don't get on the power play so much. For defensive players, again, because it's so hard to quantify them statistically, it gets hard to know, is this guy really fighting off injury? Is he exactly, I mean, is he just, he's having an off year? What's going on? But yes, this is true. There are severe injuries. Another example is Kurt Sauer of the Phoenix Coyotes, who was their number one defensive defenseman and has been out for the better part of 2 years now.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Is there a way to take this measurement? No, we don't have all the time on ice for the minor leagues, but logic dictates if you're on the penalty kill, you're going to be on for more events, and on the power play for more events. Is there a way to take this idea or logic and apply it to the American Hockey League?
Absolutely. While we don't have the time on ice numbers, what we do have is on ice. The leagues record what players are on ice for each of the goals for and against on the team, and they also know whether the team was on the power play or on the penalty kill. So you could actually figure out in the American Hockey League which players are actually being used, you know, in a more of a penalty killing role. And you could also even see which ones are being used significantly at even strength, even though they don't necessarily have the point totals to match. So that would be another sign of guys like this.
Interesting. That is really interesting. Now, I wanted to spend just a few moments here, and it's a very complicated idea, and I don't want to get too far into it, but you have a fascinating idea called goals versus threshold. Can you give me a really quick thumbnail sketch of what that does?
Yeah, goals versus threshold was an attempt to kind of aggregate all of the mainstream stats into a single player value. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, this guy, he has more points, you know, but this other guy has this going for him, and so on and so forth. And, you know, or this guy, you know, he plays less well defensively, so that should balance it out. And goals versus threshold, or GVT, was kind of a first attempt to aggregate all of the mainstream stats into a single player value. So it takes into account several things. It takes into account, obviously, offensive stats, goals and assists. It also takes into account whether a player plays on the penalty kill or on the power play, the amount of ice time they get to produce those points. It takes into account their plus minus, and it takes into account the general defensive performance of their team. So a team that allows fewer shots against, for example, the players will get defensive credit for that.
Okay, and it passes, I find, in viewing it and looking at it, it definitely passes the logic test. How far back have you gone with this?
I've calculated GVT all the way back to the 40s.
Oh, my God.
So I have a spreadsheet online that can give you all data back to 1945. The data only really gets interesting as of 1967, because it's only then that the league started recording what players were on the ice for goals, and that's what allows us to get a kind of a rough idea of ice time. Without a rough idea of ice time, it's very hard to get intelligent player valuations.
You're talking to an old Oakland Seals fan here, so you're right up my alley. I'm obviously going to be emailing you like crazy here. You went back all the way to the 40s. That's fabulous.
With pleasure. Well, that, one of the benefits of GBT is also to be able to do historical data. And I think it's one of the useful instruments in settling historical questions, like, for example, Hall of Fame eligibility. And in a lot of cases, you know, we talk about players and we try to think, you know, is this guy good for the Hall of Fame or not? And the problem is that hockey has changed so much over time. You know, scoring has gone up, scoring has gone down. You look at players who have played in the last 15 years, their numbers seem paltry compared to the players who played in the 80s, but that's only because scoring has been down by 35% since its Gretzky era glory.
Absolutely.
So GBT allows you to compare apples to apples from that point of view.
That is very interesting, and I hope to talk to you more about that. Where can people find you on the internet, Dom?
You can find me at hockeyprospectus.com. There's also links. There's links to the GVT spreadsheets there. I also write for ESPN.com, and I contribute to my friend Gabriel Desjardins' blog at BehindTheNetHockey.com.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Okay. Tom Awad from Hockey Prospectus and other parts, and a fascinating individual. And that GVT, I'm sort of familiar with it, but not as much as I should be. But if you're looking for, if you're a stats nut like I am, that's probably about 5 years I can waste right there. I know that my entire family will be thrilled to hear that. Redline introduced their new list today, and I'm just going to go over it very briefly before the break. Gabriel Landeskog is number one from Kitchener of the OHL. RNH, number two. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at number two from Red Deer. Adam Larson is at number three, and Dougie Hamilton at four, which is very interesting because Dougie Hamilton has been moving up that list for quite some time, but that is a jump. Jonathan Huberdeau also jumping to number five from St. John of the Q. Ryan Murphy at six. Ryan Strome, who some people have much higher, at number seven from Niagara. And Sean Couturier has now dropped to number eight. Man, he is like Tavares right now. Everybody's starting to question Sean Couturier. I don't see it in the stats. He looks like a winner stats-wise. And Alex Kokhlachev from Windsor is number nine. Brandon Saad running out of the top 10 from Saginaw. A very OHL heavy list, but RNH at number two, and that's interesting as well. We'll talk about that list in the second hour of our show with Jonathan Willis, who will be joining us live in studio. This is Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. On the way, we're going to talk a little bit about OKC.